Hi, I'm Brian Strauss, co-founder of Demand Collective and host of the Collective Wisdom Podcast. Collective Wisdom is a demand generation podcast brought to you by Demand Collective, a hyper-vetted community of demand gen and revenue marketers. Apply to join online at demandcollective.io. Thanks for listening. Welcome to another episode of Collective Wisdom by Demand Collective. Today, I'm joined by Ben Staley, Senior Director of Marketing Operations and Promotions at Vendor, a B2B SaaS buying platform that enables the world's fastest growing companies to purchase SaaS without friction and at a fair price. Ben has over 13 years of marketing experience. He focuses on crafting and implementing emerging data-driven B2B marketing and go-to-market strategies, as well as technology and processes for fast-paced, high-growth companies. Thanks for joining us, Ben. How are you doing today?
Hey, good, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Super excited to have you. So we'll just dive right in. You began as a marketing coordinator at Workright Uniform in 2010. And at that time, you had the opportunity to work on some pretty important projects to the company, like reworking their Salesforce instance, helping to launch the updated website, and driving event initiatives. How were you able to insert yourself into these projects so early in your career? And what were the results, and how has that early experience really shaped how you market today?
Yeah, so I actually left there in 2010. I started there in 2007. For those of you who is probably everybody who's never heard of that company before, neither had I before I went to work there. But I studied marketing in college and knew I wanted to be in marketing. And it's interesting, I feel like a lot of the textbook marketing is a lot more kind of ad agency and creative type of marketing. So when I joined Workright as their marketing coordinator, the company is a very, very traditional workwear manufacturing company. They specialized in flame retardant clothing. So our customers were like petrochemical refineries and fire departments and utility companies for their utility line workers. And so we primarily sold at trade shows and through a direct regional sales force who would like leave brochures at people's offices back in 2007. So I never imagined that this world would have existed. And my hiring manager, who has been a mentor to me throughout my career, had an amazing onboarding experience since I was just out of college. And she sent me to trade shows around the country with the sales team. Mm-hmm. And it completely opened my eyes to working with salespeople and actually getting to talk to customers rather than the marketing that I had studied in college. And so that was just a really cool jumping off point for my career that was very influential in shaping my passion for demand gen specifically and being really closely tied to sales teams. Mm-hmm. The technology portion, oddly enough, I got to learn at Workright as well. So when I joined the company, this was relatively early days of Salesforce, and they had hired a consultant to come in and help them move from Excel spreadsheets, forecasting and everything to managing a sales pipeline and Salesforce. And so I got to sit in on some of those sessions. And then after the consultant left, they kind of left the company holding the bag with a Salesforce instance. And given the very traditional nature of the company, I was probably like the youngest person in sales and marketing by like 20 years. Yeah. And so people just were kind of like, hey, young kid, do you want to like manage this technology? So I taught myself how to be a Salesforce admin. We had some processes with product development who manufactured the garments with sales that were all paper and files. And I learned how to build custom objects and transition those paper filing processes into Salesforce so we could report on them. So that's what kind of led me down this path of marketing career that intersects with sales, collaboration, and technology and process. So the next couple stops in my career were very specifically geared toward identifying companies and roles where, and I'll date myself a little bit here, where I could go learn email marketing and then learn marketing automation. As those became sort of the emerging thing. But really the foundation of that initial passion was me having to teach myself Salesforce.
Oh, I know. I totally get you. That was a similar situation for me early in my career, learning Marketo and Salesforce.
Yeah.
So maybe run me a little bit through your work right now with Vendor. You talked a little bit about your background, teaching yourself all of these sort of technical components. How did you get from point A, you know, at Workright to where you are now?
Lots of stops and lots of great mentors. What we're focused on at Vendor is a super cool inflection point for the company. We're Series B, and we raised our Series B in, I want to say, July of 2022. So a year and a half ago. We had acquired a platform back in January of that year, roughly. To sort of transition from a services-based company to a product company that had a platform to build your procurement process. So flash forward to now, we are further evolving now to be a product-led company rather than a sales-led company in terms of our go-to-market strategy. So last year when I joined the company, I was very focused on demand generation, as everyone is probably really familiar with, right? Building that funnel of marketing qualified leads or target accounts that get heated up, BDRs work, generate meetings for AEs, et cetera. And now we are evolving and rebuilding some of our processes and marketing strategies and tactics to focus on driving self-serve signups into the platform for a free version.
Yeah. And so when you have those conversations, like right now, what is your structure for the team look like?
We're a small but mighty marketing team of five. So we have a marketing and corporate strategy leader, somebody over brand and comms, a creative director, and then myself and my team of two, three, if you include myself. I've got a growth marketing manager. And then we have a marketing engineer, if you will. So he's essentially like a principal level architect. But instead of building the product, he's building and architecting our go-to-market systems and all of our data.
Nice. And who are you currently reporting up to right now?
Our head of marketing and corporate strategy.
Okay, gotcha. So that's when you're having these conversations, you know, that's a huge pivot, right? To pivot towards like a PLG product-led motion. Like, what are some of the distinct changes you had to make? And when having those conversations, how did you weigh in terms of what direction you thought it should take?
Yeah. So very simplified, I would say, for those of you listening who are demand gen marketers that are used to working hand in hand with BDRs or SDRs in a sales organization, for me, the change in thinking is frame it as that same sort of traditional, in air quotes, if you will, sales and marketing partnership is now a marketing and product partnership. Mm-hmm. So the same way that I would develop my marketing targets in partnership with sales and their goals and forecasts, now I'm working to align my goals and targets with products. And sales is still very much in the conversation, but that's how I've mentally kind of reframed who my primary stakeholders are. How do I work with them on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's an interesting dichotomy there, because you go from such a sales-centric motion to really just elevating that product as much as possible for people to self-serve, right? And I assume when you say product-led, it is a largely self-serve function is kind of what the new move looks like.
Yeah, self-serve freemium version with also a lot of lifecycle marketing, right? So using our marketing infrastructure, you know, sort of I would think of it as almost much more sophisticated and active lead nurturing, right? So rather than maybe lead nurturing of a couple years ago, it's like, think of all of the different triggers that you could have when someone is using your product that would then trigger a nurture or a life cycle journey.
Right. Yeah. So I imagine throughout this whole process, managing up becomes like a really big challenge, right? You run into, you know, there's the things that matter to you as a marketer and the things that matter to the ELT, right? Or how do you shape those conversations? And kind of at what point did you realize you had to frame a conversation a certain way for it to make sense to the ELT level versus what's relevant to you and your team?
Yeah, I would say definitely during my time, I would say at Rackspace, maybe even prior at Xeris, because I had quite a bit of executive level interactions, especially at Xeris, it was a smaller company. But then at Rackspace, as I grew my career into leading teams, one very obvious way is you get a lot of questions that give you an inclination that somebody doesn't understand. And yeah. so pretty quickly, you then learn that you have to reframe how you are basically teeing up conversations or your decisions or your asks for more support or help on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in my experience, at least, that's one of the tough lessons I think a lot of marketers have to learn is we all have to manage up, right? But there's the component of recognizing why should this member, one, give a shit about what we're talking about? How does it impact the broader business? And two, how do you make it so that you're a marketer to have a seat at the table needs to understand where it fits into the broader piece? How do you contextualize your conversations to meet that need? How do you basically make marketing relevant to the ELT?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think of managing up as enabling other people to advocate for me and my team. Mm-hmm. So I think with a broad definition that gets thrown out a lot, it can kind of help to explain or frame exactly how I think of it. And I didn't always think of managing up in that way, right? Like sometimes conversations I may have had with folks on my team and they tell me what they think managing up is. And it's sort of like I'm doing the leader's job for them or something like that. Yeah. And especially in bigger organizations, I think it's much more about how do I enable my direct leader to work with their leaders and advocate for the needs of my team so that we can perform our best. So may I ask you to ask the question again, since I started with the definition and I lost the question?
Oh, you're good. You're good. I was basically just asking, how do you contextualize these conversations to be relevant to the ELT?
Yeah. But part of it depends on how much exposure you have. Obviously, if you're a marketer that's a direct sitting member of ELT and you have that direct exposure, it's different than maybe if you're one or two layers removed.
Right.
If you do have maybe the blessing and the curse of being a direct sitting member of ELT, I think one thing we as marketers understand maybe inherently or through our training and the fact that we're marketers is I look at ELT as a whole and specific members as marketing to different personas, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of us do in our day-to-day jobs. And even if you've got a side hustle, each member of ELT or ELT as a body tends to sort of have very specific things that they care about, unique needs. And so building relationships with them or their leaders is really critical, right? Where I think marketing, well, one area that I think makes marketing really unique compared to other functions is everybody experiences marketing right? Mm-hmm. Everyone is marketed to in their lives. So people experience good and bad marketing and therefore has an opinion about it, right? It's different than maybe finance or product in that regard. But I think that makes it really important for us as marketers and marketing leaders when you are navigating your career and moving up to really focus on relationship building with cross-functional peers so that you understand the needs and goals of other departments and even their frame of reference for marketing so that you can tailor your conversations and how you're talking about it at the leadership level, how you're talking about marketing, so that it resonates with your audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cross-functionality. I agree. I think is a really important component. But also, you made an interesting point about marketing being unique, right? And I think on one point, yes, you're correct. It is something that everyone experiences. I think the other thing that makes marketing unique is I think it faces a scrutiny as a cost center that other departments don't nearly as much, right? No one ever goes, how much is support costing us? How much is sales? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Of course, you're looking at those numbers and then scaling.
Yeah.
But like,
but there's a lot more gray area with marketing where, yeah, people intrinsically understand that it's customer facing, yet you're not typically interacting directly with the customer.
Mm-hmm. And they go, do we really need to invest in that? We go, well, yeah, that's, you know, that's what's bringing in the deals. And it was interesting, you know, you brought up all the events and it's, I think there is a big inclination for a lot of marketers to feel like there is a go-to playbook. And I think executives like to hear that as well when they hire, right? They go, we want to hire someone who's done it before, who's done 5 to 10 million X amount of times. How do you do it? And it's, I think it's hearing about your journey as a marketer, I think really speaks to the variability of the field and the variability of how dynamic it can be across industries and company types. But going back to the question around managing up, what are some, you know, some examples of bad, you know, ELT that you've management that you've seen where you've been like, that's not the way I would have done it, or any sort of what you would recommend against doing?
That's a great question. I do think there's a balance of trying to understand your executive level peers or audience so deeply that it comes off as deferring to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area that frankly has tripped me up in my past as well, right? Like you want to do, especially me and my personality type, part of the reason why I love marketing and demand gen in particular is the collaborative nature internally. But one area that's tripped me up in my past, I think, is sort of working to understand each of the functional leaders' perspectives and what they expect of marketing so much that it almost seems like you're deferring decision-making to someone else, right? And at the end of the day, it's also really important if you have the visibility at that level that you also recognize that you are the expert and that they're looking at you to make decisions and also be really transparent about some of the risks and help you might need in order to accomplish the decision that you're recommending.
That's a great call out. The you know, be the expert. That's what I remember an early boss of mine told me as I walked into, you know, I was gearing up to do this big presentation. He goes, "You're the expert. Be the expert." And that like stuck with me. And it's, you know, what kind of advice would you give to someone who feels, and I think most marketers have been through this, where that sort of deferment is pressed upon them, where they aren't being given the autonomy to make those decisions. How do you recommend that they act within that?
That's such a unique scenario. And my I'd say leadership style with my own team and coaching that I've received in my past as well, right? Is if you feel like that level of autonomy is not given, then like, how can you go create that, right? And maybe it's start with a smaller scope, or maybe that's an indicator that you haven't built enough trust and strong enough relationship with the person that you believe is the giver of that autonomy.
Yeah.
Right. But I try to always be mindful and frame my own thinking as much as possible of like, I'm in control of my own destiny here. And I would caution, like, frankly, and I know this probably isn't what you intended, but if I had somebody on my team or another marketing peer that came to me and said, so-and-so, you know, CEO or whomever is just not giving me the autonomy, then I would ask them a lot of questions about why they think that that isn't the case and what they can do to gain back some control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because oftentimes, like a lot of things, and I experienced this about budget, and I always will tell my teams about budget, right? Is like everything is a little bit of a negotiation. So maybe that perceived sense of no autonomy is just being told no once, which one of my former bosses have said. I don't remember the exact thing, but it was essentially like the first no is only the start of the negotiation.
Yeah, with marketing, it's always a negotiation. How do you navigate those conversations where, you know, going on the topic of negotiations and going back to that point about cost centers, we understand as demand marketers that all of these pieces go into they're the sum of parts, right? That's the marketing strategy. How do you convey that something's not just a cost center, even if it won't, quote, have immediate attributable ROI? Like, what's that conversation look like to you?
I think it really highlights the importance of, as a marketing leader, building a really close relationship with your finance partners.
Yeah.
I think that's an often under-discussed and underutilized resource within marketing. One of my former CMOs used to caution our marketing leadership team as like not wanting to be or needing to be wary of becoming navel gazers, in essentially like only caring about our own metrics and looking internally.
Right.
And I think if you can, as a demand gen leader, can be build a strong relationship with your finance leader, team, partner, and get them speaking a common language with you, that will go a super long way into budget conversations, annual planning, things like that, and just getting a broader executive team on board with your recommended approach of how do you measure marketing's effectiveness and impact. But conversely, if you don't do that, oftentimes it's the finance leader who's the first to derail any marketing conversation at the executive level.
Right. Yeah. That's a hard lesson. I think a lot of marketers have had to learn. And I know, like, you know, you as a marketer, to be effective at that level, you have to be cognizant of the business-wide metrics, LTV, CAC payback time, acquisition cost on its own, right? As well as the margins, which I think is something that really doesn't get talked about enough is, okay, your acquisition cost is X, the payback time is Y, but ultimately, is the business sustainable? And we know, you know, that you just before we hopped on here, we were talking about how the industry of tech, SaaS, et cetera, is all shifting so quickly, right? And you're seeing all these layoffs, you're seeing fundamental business models shifting from growth at all costs to profitability and sustainability, right?
Yep.
How do you think
Absolutely.
How do you think a marketer takes that on and learns that? And what steps would you take if you were new to this, right? If you were teaching someone, what steps would they take to educate themselves and to become knowledgeable in that way?
It depends on your learning style. I love my learning through collaborating. So if you're asking me that question directly, I would say for myself, that's where I would go partner with my finance team, partner with my CS team, especially right when we understand lifetime value, really understand how different parts of the business are measuring their own functions so that you can learn all those different pieces. For other people, that may look like joining a community or doing some self-paced coursework that is probably out there for this stuff. Yeah. But for me, I always, just by nature of my personality, but I think there's also a strong career growth recommendation in there. Again, just building those relationships and getting to know your internal stakeholders and experts better. That's the route I would go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they a lot of different learning styles for that. I agree where I'm also like a collaborative learner. You know, the quicker we can just dive right in, the quicker it is to figure it out, trial by fire. Looks like we've got a question from Kelly in here. So Kelly, do you want to read your question off?
Sure. I was just wondering, I'm sure there's plenty of times where you are having strategy conversations and you have an idea that you really think needs to be considered. But what happens, like, you know, if an ELT maybe like doesn't think it works based on their prior experience or even like watching other companies do it, or conversely, like if they're pushing for something that you kind of think doesn't really work anymore?
Yeah. I think we as marketers all have experienced the latter. I'll start with the former though. So my first question would be, assuming this is a real life scenario, or if we're just even, you know, in a hypothetical one, if somebody were coming to me asking for guidance saying, hey, ELT shot down my idea, I would ask them if they did the necessary pre-work with some of their key ELT peers to get their buy-in before the meeting, or if they just, did you just walk into that meeting and give your idea and hope that everyone was going to take it? For those who like, outside of demand gen, just broader leadership development, I'm a big fan of the author, Patrick Lencioni. And he's got some great books. One of my favorites is called Silos, Politics, and Turf Wars. But he also has this concept he introduces in some of his books called the first team. And it's something that I had heard about at a previous company, but didn't know until I started reading his books. But basically the idea is like, if let's say you're the head of marketing at a company, your first team or the team that you're most responsible for is not actually your direct reports, but it's your team of peers. So you are not part of the CEO's first team. Their CEO's first team is the board. The ELT minus the CEO is their own first team. And so if you think sort of with that paradigm in mind, to me, as a leader, it's a very powerful framework for thinking about the work that you need to do to build buy-in before walking in to certain meetings. Because sometimes, and I've seen that, I've experienced this firsthand, right? If a leader walks into an ELT meeting and the CEO can tell that this is everyone's first time of hearing about the thing that they want to do, there's no way that thing is going to get done. The CEO is looking for that leader to have checked the box and circulated their idea, gathered input, et cetera, with their first team of peer leaders. And if it comes across as like a collective idea, then I think your chances of success increase exponentially. Conversely, second part of the question, somebody pushing for a strategy that you think no longer works. On the one hand, I'd love to say that, you know, just show them the data, which is probably answers we've all heard. but I think we've also all experienced doesn't always work. And so when I've, as I lead teams, that's something that is in my, the back of my head, just, you know, that at some point somebody is going to come and make an ask that you just need to go try, whether it's been tried before or not. And so how do you manage the capacity of your team's time so that those don't feel like this is just one more thing amongst a bunch of other things? But okay, we've got time for this, or we've got a framework in place as a team where we can test this, and it's not going to become the straw that breaks the camel's back for everyone's well-being on the team or their own engagement.
Yeah. How do you handle some of that blocking and tackling, really just like shaping the prioritization of your team?
I want to say off the top of my head, that's almost like priority number one for a leader, right? For those of us who sign up for leadership, typically you're not signing up for the execution work of the team anymore. And so I think it's a good mental check-in for yourself of how are you balancing your time? And if you find yourself doing too much execution, and maybe that there's a correlation between, man, we're just getting tons of requests from other stakeholders and I'm doing a lot of execution, that can just be a good check-in with yourself to say, maybe I'm not doing enough one-on-ones with my other peer leaders. And maybe it's a reflection of folks not feeling like they know what's going on in marketing. And so the assumption is we need to give marketing more work to do because we aren't aware of what's going on in marketing, right? Sometimes it's a vacuum of information and people fill that vacuum of information with their own narrative.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or, you know, one of the other, you know, sort of common mistakes I see is one, either other members, cross-functional department heads don't know what marketing is doing, or if they know what marketing is doing, they don't understand the why, right? Where does this blog fit in, this event fit in, this X, Y, or Z tactic, right? How do you pull those pieces together to express the why?
I think having a really well-established goal and activity framework is important, whether that's OKRs, and I know especially if you're at a smaller company, there's not a big annual planning process because things move fast. But that's where, for me as a leader, typically having 1 to 3 slides in my back pocket of here are our 3 big goals for the year, the big rocks that we're focusing on as a result, and a little bit of who's doing what, just so that when I have one-on-ones with other leaders or I get the opportunity to speak at an all hands or something, I have content that's prepared that gives a really quick snapshot of like, here's why marketing exists at the company this year. This is the business value we're driving, or that we are accountable and gold on driving. And then, as a result of having experts on the teams, here are the areas of focus, like either programs or tactics, as a result of what we're trying to achieve this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, that's great feedback. I think maybe now we'll, if there's any other questions, we can open it up. Kelly, Diana, Kendall, any of you have any additional questions you'd like to ask Ben while we're all here? Feel free to drop them in the chat or just unmute.
Yeah, I have a question. Do you, I mean, I think earlier we talked about, like, you know, whenever there is an initiative that might have fuzzy attribution or it might be difficult to talk about like the ROI of it. When it comes to like ELT, certain personalities want the data. Certain personalities are kind of more interested in the why or the vision behind it. And I'm kind of curious, like from your seat, how do you kind of mitigate those two different kinds of conversations where it's like, you know, trying to prove the impact of something that might not be totally measurable. And maybe if you have an example to connect those dots to you, that'd be helpful.
Yeah. I think even the way the question is framed in my experience, if the ask is to prove the value of something, then someone's opinion has already been formulated and marketing is playing defense. Right. So to me, what I see time and time again, at the heart of that, of those types of questions, is really a desire to understand, how does marketing make decisions about what to do and not to do and where to invest money, right? That ultimately ROI is a part of that. But if you're getting into ROI of a specific tactic or a specific channel, that's a losing battle. And I think we all as marketers know, by and large, especially in B2B, right? Maybe some B2C, this may not be true, but B2B especially, there's no one silver bullet activity or channel or touch point that is the thing to triple down on to skyrocket the business, right? It's going to be a combination of channels and tactics. So that to me is where that partnership with finance to set the stage on, here's how we are going to establish marketing's KPIs. Here's how we view success. And here is also why we don't measure the ROI on pick a tactic that's very top of funnel, right? Like I would say programmatic display. We are generally like that's something that in my past and even current like conversations with finance, we're not going to measure the direct attribution ROI on programmatic display, right? Like that's not what it's designed to do. So frameworks where you can articulate the user journey through the funnel and then maybe how tactics map to that. And then what is the measure of success for a tactic or a channel if pipeline generation or revenue is not the success metric, being proactive to say, and here's how we measure that, which also goes back to something Brian said earlier in the conversation, right? Like CAC and LTV. I actually think marketing moving more into those conversations is a great thing because that's like an aggregated view of marketing spend and how it impacts acquisition costs and profitability rather than scrutinizing what was the ROI on that sponsored webinar you did. But that requires a shift in language and relationship building with partners who maybe, you know, especially again, for folks who aren't in the marketing discipline every day, maybe coming in with, oh, at my past company, we measured MQLs and this is what our funnel looked like. Right. The modern customer journey and funnel is probably very different than a lot of non-marketers' frame of reference. And that just requires a lot of education.
Yeah. I think one of the things is like so many marketers learn X in school, if they go to school for that, right? They learn Y in the field. And somewhere along the way, we lose sight of the broader business strategy there, right? No one really teaches you that. You kind of a lot of time get thrown into the pit and you end up having the conversations with the CFO or the CEO or just working directly with those teams. You end up having to either sink or swim, you know?
Yeah.
But any other questions? Kelly, I know Diana and Kendall both said they were good. All good. Sweet. Well,
I think real quick, Brian, if I can, there was a question up in the chat earlier from Kelly about folks pushing for things that no longer work that did spark a thought in mind as well. Like we talked about managing up. I think the other thing to learn and get comfortable with operating at the ELT level is openness and transparency, right? One thing that can lead to eroded trust of marketing is feeling like, hey, we're only hearing good news all the time. And being honest about what's not working or the need to change a strategy and asking for help, I think is like that transparency and vulnerability is something that can be hard to break through for some people personally, yeah. But I think really opens up the support of an executive team and just like the confidence as well that, oh, okay, this marketing leader is looking at the business and doesn't have total rose-colored glasses about their function and is proactive as well, right? We don't feel like we have to go to them and tell them what to do and what to change.
Yeah, they that is a great call out. And it goes back to what I mentioned earlier about the why, right? Like be transparent about what isn't working, but also make sure you include the why. Like one thing I've seen on SKO decks, things like that, right? Or just sort of recaps where they'll do like a marketing by the numbers, right? And they don't connect the dots to why something is being pulled, right? So like at surface level, KPIs might look great, right? Maybe click-through rate is good. Maybe impressions are good. But they don't explain that actually all of the inbound leads who are coming from these channels or who are being influenced by these channels are garbage, or they take too long to close, right? Or the deal size is too small. You just say, hey, we're getting rid of this because it's not working. Okay, but why? All the sales guys love it because it, quote, brings in a ton of leads. So making sure you're contextualizing, so important.
Yeah.
But a great final point there. Any other things any final thoughts you'd like to share before we sign off, or any shameless plugs?
No, it's been great. Appreciate getting to meet the folks who jumped on from the community.
Yeah, we're super glad to have you, Ben. This has been a great conversation. To everyone listening, thanks for joining us for another episode of Collective Wisdom. Thank you, Ben, for being our guest today. I really look forward to seeing the great work you continue to do with Vendor. For those listening, if you're a demand marketer looking for a tight-knit community of demand gen experts, be sure to apply to our community, Demand Collective, at demandcollective.io. Thanks, everyone, and have a great week.